To quote Curb Your Enthusiasm, you have to respect the wood.
Hello and welcome to bonus episode number 2. These are the hashtag MTOS episodes, which is where we talk through some questions that I've used for the movie talk on Sunday chats, which are on Twitter at 8 p.m. every Sunday, 8 p.m. UK time. I always have to say the UK time because you occasionally get some people who will tweet going, I missed it. So I'll answer the questions anyway, I don't mind. This episode, we'll be looking at the works of Marvel films, encompassing the Fox ones, which are now Disney ones, but let's just look back on what Fox did. We'll look at the Sony ones without the whole fjord of, like, what's going on with Sony and Marvel, we don't know. And then we'll move on to the MCU. Around the table again, I have
James.
Scott.
Jason.
And I'm Andy. I don't know why we always laugh at Jason. Although, looking at him, yeah, I can see why we all laugh at him.
And I feel like I'm in the Joker trailer right now.
And I'm Andy. So let's kick off with Fox. As holders to the rights of the X-Men and Fantastic Four, whilst they were running them all, have they served any of the material well? Or has the absorbing into the Disney family been a well-needed action? James?
They've not really done a great job since Days of Future Past, really. They've been poor. They need to hand over the license back to Marvel, but it's given it to Disney, which I don't like them at the minute.
Yeah, there's a lot to dislike about Disney's.
Just to make a quick I don't know if we call it a disclaimer or a thing, but like we do, you know, we're doing roundtable discussion. People will have different opinions and stuff. But I know that a lot, like Marvel is one of the things that's most polarizing at the moment. People are throwing shade and stuff at each other. So we just want to say, this is all like, this is fun. This is our opinions. Please, let's be nice to people who listen and to each other. Because I know we can all be a bit.
Let's not get venomous.
Yeah.
I promise.
That'll be the questions on Sony.
I promise nothing.
Sony should get the rights. That's the one.
So Scott, is that like, have they done anything well? Have they misstepped?
Well, you have to say they've done it well in that X-Men film in 2000 is credited for starting this like sort of new post-2000 wave of superhero films that's just grown and grown and grown. And there's some good films there. X-Men 2 is still pretty solid. Days of Future Past, I thought, was a decent quasi-reboot. Logan's a great spin-off. And Deadpool. But they've had issues with continuity. They've been scared to fully commit to these characters. Like, I know this might be controversial because like he's Hugh Jackman and everyone loves him, but like that's not Wolverine for me.
No. Wolverine for me is 5'3".
Yeah, he's a Canadian, he's like surly, he's short, he's in a yellow costume. Yes, yellow. Yes, I expected yellow spandex. I don't like that that's a joke. So I think a reboot and just a fresh new, that's in the past, well done, that we've got loads of films over there that will never be touched, let's start again, is what I've wanted for years.
I've always quite enjoyed them in their own way because they're not offensive, and every take on any superhero adaptation from comic to film tends to add its own thing to certain characters to make them more relatable or appealing. So for the X-Men franchise, where they had their issue was obviously starting so early, is they kind of went, well, if we go all in with the suits and the colours, you know, people aren't going to connect so much. So we'll make it a bit cooler, like with post-Matrix world and all of that trend of action. So we've got the black and the sleek. And the films themselves have been, I'll say, enjoyable at points, but continuity issues have been huge.
Oh, and it's not even small, is it? No. It's not something you can go, oh, I'm being a nerd.
And you know there's a bit of an issue when, in order to deal with continuity errors, they have to create a new continuity in which to correct the errors in-universe.
And it still doesn't quite fit.
Yeah.
Well, the most recent Dark Phoenix, so where she suddenly gets her Phoenix powers that she also showed in the previous film, which was set years before anyway.
Yeah.
So they've now created their own new continuity errors just as they've finished. Interestingly, this question was initially written before Dark Phoenix came out. And I think the results of Dark Phoenix kind of make me glad in a way that they're going to be moving to the MCU. But as has been hinted at, let's not forget the importance that the X-Men franchise had in
Absolutely.
giving some life to the superhero genre on screen. You know, without those early X-Men films, we wouldn't have had an Iron Man film.
No.
Because there wouldn't have been that, like, you know, that want and desire to go, well, let's manage to get something in there. And Marvel at the time had so little of their own rights that they drew on characters that were a bit under the radar.
Yeah.
And have made a great franchise. And yeah, it's ballooned and it's escalated, and we'll get more to that later. But yeah, I think Fox started off really well with them.
Mm.
They gave a lot of, like, full creative license to Singer on how he was managing to set the whole tone for it. And the first two films are absolutely brilliant. But then Brett Ratner came along, made that third mess, and that's where it kind of hit the first stumbling block. But we then got the reboot of First Class.
First Class.
Which I've got a lot of love for.
Yeah.
I can go back and rewatch that film over and over again. I think it really hits all the beats really well.
It was one of those ones where when I heard about it initially, I was like, oh, I'm not sure, because, you know, how are you going to replace or do Stewart and McKellen again? And then they chose two of my favourite actors anyway. And I was like, well, no, I'm in.
You just can't go wrong with bacon as well.
You can never go wrong with bacon. Whilst that was good, and then Days of Future Past, as has already been mentioned, was like a really solid, like, okay, now the timeline's going to get changed.
Mm-hmm.
So now we can justify how it's going to go off in different directions to where it should have been. I think after that is where it started to
wander. They just dropped
the ball again, didn't they? Logan aside, because Logan is just a film of its own. It's absolutely stunning. Cinematography-wise, story-wise, I think it's a great final piece for that character. But, you know, you look at...
me and Chan are both exhaled expectedly, but I'm really curious what you were going to say there.
It's one of those, when I first watched it, it's like, yeah, Logan was good, but then I started thinking about it more, and I was like, what did I actually just watch?
What do you mean?
Well, it's been that long now, I can't actually remember most.
Okay, well,
I remember how I felt after coming out of the film.
Yeah, what I distinctly remember is we all watched it and we're all sat there and we're like, oh, it's quite good. We're outside and we're talking about it. And then we were slowly going, hang on a minute, what? Did we enjoy ourselves?
Me and you, though, are terrible for that.
Yeah, we are.
If we come out of a film and then we'll talk ourselves from loving something to ripping it to shreds in about 5 minutes.
I mean, Apocalypse was terrible. I watched that film and came out of it. My first words were, that was Mortal Kombat Annihilation with a different cast.
That sounds awesome.
It's what I was waiting for all these years, finally.
A true successor.
And let's be honest, we're never going to see New Mutants. It'll go to streaming at some point. Yeah. It's unlikely to get a cinematic release. And that has been a tortured production from start to finish.
Even in the later end, where these massive missteps and they weren't making tons of money, Deadpool and Logan... That spirit to be read in this new like R-rated movement of comic book films, and a slight evolution still. So they're still being relevant to the very end, you could argue, which is an achievement. But the times is perfect. I think Fantastic Four. Notice how it's not come up once.
Well, question two moves a bit more into Fantastic Four.
Oh, it's just.
But we'll let you.
Because part of the question was about are you the Disney element of it. I want a new creative team to tackle. I want a reboot, but I don't like Disney holding as many licenses as it does now. And I feel like I'm worried that if they have as many Marvel titles as they do, but although there's a lot of love and passion there, at times they've been complacent, which we'll discuss later on, I assume, when we're talking about the MCU mainstay. But it does make me more nervous than if Fox were just like still doing what we're doing with their licenses and went, oh, we're just going for a, you know, we're doing it again. We're doing our, you know, a First Class again, but...
It's like you feel that there won't be as many risks.
Yeah. It feels like we're playing a Monopoly game where someone's clearly winning, but you feel you have to play it out anyway. and it's all Disney.
So drawing onto the Fantastic Four license, have they simply mishandled it? And if so, you know, is it just that the property itself isn't that good on a comic form, and so it was never going to adapt well?
The property things and... a massive issue, because obviously Marvel as a publisher did massive disservice to bring the price of the Fantastic Four license down so they could reacquire it. And also because as a result, a lot of the material has been aged and older and stuff, and they weren't really touching on the Ultimates line. It's a bit unfair to say, like, is the property not good? It's just the property at times has been slightly more irrelevant to, like, modern day storytelling and the way comics have... Because one of the things that comics has always been amazing at is catching the zeitgeist of the times. whenever you pick up a comic from a certain time period, you tend to feel that time period in like its values, its stylistic like approaches, and even what colors and stuff are used. Although a lot of that's based on print and press, you sort of feel it, you know? When something is like already, you know, struggled at times and then was deliberately misused, it's a bit tricky. And then when you're starting a comic book licensed film, you're not going to hit the Ultimates approach because you need your four characters to be likable. You can't have someone like Reed Richards actually be not likable because you need that initially. So you can't call upon your most relevant and interesting versions of a character. And it was mishandled at first with the original Fantastic Four and Rise of the Silver Surfer. But then later on, it's a bit harder to contextualize because you don't have as much source material to...
It's interesting mentioning the Ultimates version, because the Ultimate Fantastic Four comic, those characters clearly influenced the Fan-Four-Stick film.
I didn't see that.
Because the first like 25 minutes is pretty much like the first issue of the Ultimate Fantastic Four run.
Controversial opinion. I actually think that like the first half of that film is pretty good.
Oh yeah, it's
setting up. This like quasi-realistic Fantastic Four.
You can genuinely see the point at which the studio lost faith in the director, booted him off, and started reshooting things behind his back and re-editing it behind his back. Because that first half of it is clearly his film.
Yeah.
And then it's the last half of the film that it just falls apart. James, any thoughts on Fantastic Four?
I've not really got much on them because they've not really been one of my strong suits for, you know, liked titles, and the films have been very poor. I've not even watched the last one that came out.
See, I'm pretty... Part of me is a little bit sad, because although, like I said earlier, I'm not a big fan of Disney getting all of these Fox licenses. One of the things I used to love reading Spider-Man growing up was the rivalry between the Human Torch and Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And so when they did that, I was like, oh, good, maybe they can bring that in. That'd be really interesting and fun, because you'd get the youthful side of both of them, they're sort of like trying to find them, you know, who they are, and, you know, the sibling, not like a sibling rivalry, because, you know, you don't have many, like, I certainly don't have any superpowered, like, people I can relate to and stuff. And then when the Sony thing, I was like, oh well,
that's
a nice little thought, but...
I mean, I've always loved the Fantastic Four comics. It was the first Marvel comic that I was ever bought for me as a kid, and it's what got me into the superhero comics. Overall, I thought that the Tim Story films, Fantastic Four and Rise of the Silver Surfer, it did more things right than it did wrong. It got the characters, it got the family aspects, the interaction. I just don't feel it went cosmic enough, because the Fantastic Four for me should always be like cosmic and far out kind of stories, whereas they were very like contained to earth and like very personal ones. I want it to be more cosmic. I think it was far too much for Fox to take a risk with, to go with that, as you can see with the Fan-Four-Stick. That they kind of bottled it halfway through the film.
I agree, because they're very much Marvel's first family, and they're like they're almost the most comic book of all the Marvel properties in my mind. Like they're the ones that are like just out and proud superhero wacky fare. That you shouldn't be apologetic. You should have Negative Zones and Doctor Dooms and Galactus, and these are larger than life comic book concepts. And we're at a point we're quite happy to introduce some of them now. In the mid-noughties, I can see why they were trepidants. But like you say, like in that post-Spider-Man, pre-Batman Begins sort of period, that's what all the comic book films were hitting. That was the template, wasn't it? Yeah. So they actually did it pretty much how I imagined them. They're like, hit the family dynamics, the sort of fame aspect, and the fact they're at these out and proud superheroes. It hit all the beats. It's just felt meh, didn't it? Because we needed a new direction genre-wise. And then now, I just think everyone's scared to use them in a weird way. And it doesn't help that The Incredibles is essentially the Fantastic Four.
Yes, it is. It is. And that's
so it's been done.
That's one of the reasons that I wasn't too happy with The Incredibles, because it didn't do anything new for me that I hadn't already encountered elsewhere. And look, like when I mentioned this on a podcast years ago, I got lambasters like, but it did, loads of things new. Whenever you ever had a family on screen as superheroes, like, Fantastic Four. Yeah, but whenever you ever had, like, the Fantastic Four. Yeah, but on screen, though, it might have done this, but like, whenever you ever seen this story play out, Fantastic Four comics. And everything was just like, it was too similar to Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the reasons that I hated it, because I wanted Fantastic Four to be that. And so I've got this venomous attack against like the Incredibles, simply because it's doing what the Fantastic Four film should have been doing, and they've ripped them off.
Yeah.
But now it's a Disney license.
Oh, and now,
now they can meet.
Now chaos will reign. The next question was to rank the X-Men films in order. I think we basically covered that on the first question as to which ones people think are the best ones, which people think are the worst.
Last Stand, Age of Apocalypse, Dark Phoenix.
Where would the X-Men Origins Wolverine be?
Oh, that's definitely number one.
That's too good. I actually take it outside of that.
That gets a bonus.
On my listing, you've got Logan, X2, First Class, Deadpool, X1, Days of Future Past, then a very big long gap, then everything else except, and then a very big long gap, Origins Wolverine.
just a shout out there.
It's
the only one I don't think we've touched on in terms of referencing it. The second Wolverine film, The Wolverine.
Yeah.
Again, first half, surprisingly good film. Yeah. And then you go, why have the X-Men Origins Wolverine the ending?
I did enjoy that film, but
yeah.
So to Sony. Over to Sony, the holders of the Spider-Man rights, and the only holders of the Spider-Man rights as the point of the recording of this, although that rumblings are still going backwards and forwards as to what's going on. There's been three separate franchise outings for the character so far, so who's your favourite Peter Parker Spider-Man?
I'd have to be Tobey Maguire.
For both, Peter Parker and Spider-Man?
Do you not think he resembles a crying duck?
I've not really thought of it being like
all
that.
You'll see.
Because
I can see the hair from Spider-Man 3 by the duck's face.
With the amazing Spider-Man films, all I can think of is Ghost Dad all the bloody time after that second film. But
he was like the chief villain of the second one.
Chief villain of the second one. He was the side character. I'm the guilty conscience.
I've seen Amazing Spider-Man 2 more times than I care to admit to you. And Ghost Dad causes more strife than Electro does.
Well,
he's the villain.
Electro was just a good boy who didn't know how to behave.
Yes. Tom Holland is a great Peter Parker. He's the right age and all the rest. And he's the best one. But I prefer Andrew Garfield to Tobey Maguire. That's probably incredibly controversial in circles. I get the Raimi trilogy is like incredibly important to the whole genre, and Spider-Man 2 is great. I have a massive like a good bad movie vibes of Spider-Man 3 whenever I watch it and all the rest. But okay, we're a bit too cool and we're different, but that was the first time I felt I saw Spider-Man the way I liked Spider-Man on screen. He was quippy, he was more agile and stuff, part of that's effects and stuff, but more sleek and whatever. Because the Raimi ones, they're great, but they were very cookie-cutter, following off, more influenced by the Donner Supermans than anything else. By Amazing Spider-Man, we'd had enough comic book films, we could just go in a slightly different direction. So it was just tempered with a bit more of a tone I liked. Obviously, it didn't work out that great. but now we've got an even better Peter Parker, but I always struggled with Tobey Maguire as Spider-Man.
See, I feel like a grumpy old man with what I'm about to say. But
shouting at the clouds.
I'm not the biggest fan of Tom Holland. I can see he's doing a good job. People love him. That's what we want. But I feel like there's the grumpy old man in me because I'm like, oh, that quirk's actually not that good, you young kids and your references to films that I used to enjoy as a child.
That's my big critique.
I hate those quirks so much.
Yeah.
And I'm just, every time I'm like, oh, I'm warming to him. Shut up, I'm not that old.
it's not necessarily the age thing, but the movies they refer to. Like, I've had my like little brother quote The Net of all films and gone, no, that's an old movie, and that made me laugh. but I don't think any, I think kids know the context of like Empire Strikes Back. I don't think they call them old.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, they call more recent movies old.
I think it was just the Footloose thing that got me.
Too much.
The thing, like, and as well, I think he comes across at times as too likable by the other characters. Like, they warm to him quite easily sometimes on screen. I've not seen the two Spider-Man films individually. I'm talking about my own experiences, the Avengers films and Civil War.
Okay.
So my point of reference is Skewered anyway. I should have mentioned that first, really. Shouldn't I? It's a good thing with the grumpy old man thing. And like my love of Spider-Man thing is even among his own, he's a bit of an outcast because his quirks are annoying and put people off, you know, warming to him. They develop a bond, but it's always still like the, oh, he's making jokes again, which then in itself was funny when they started making Deadpool and Spider-Man work together. And it was just kind of like, who's the more annoying one here? Because, you know.
Yeah.
So I really enjoyed Garfield because I really got that feeling of like him actually annoying everyone. Him thinking he's charming. And he's not quite that charming.
Yeah, an annoying little.
Yeah, because I find that more relatable as a you know, rubbish human being to see a character.
I agree on Garfield. Garfield was a great Spidey. He gave the quips while doing the thwips. But I found him too cool as Parker.
Yeah,
he didn't feel like the insecure nerd that Peter Parker's supposed to be.
Went for more of an outcast thing.
He was a bit like of a like, ooh, you're a bit of like a loner on the outside, but oh, aren't you cool?
Yeah. See, I'd say that's sort of more of a development of the outcasts, because that's how it started to be at some point along the line with things like Daria and whatnot, where the outcast was cool, but no one obviously thought they were. So I thought it sort of worked on that in that regard, because it was like the new style of not, you know, the awkwardness is covered by a false self-confidence, which is, I'll say, it's a more recent thing, because I've known quite a few people at this point who behave like that. They're jittery messes, but they've got their too cool persona on. And I feel like it was more,
it goes full circle there, doesn't it? Because, like, by playing for the outcast to the average consumer, if he plays cool to us, then we think it's cool. And then that becomes cool because the geeks are in heaven in the earth. So Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man is cool and he shouldn't be cool. We're going for he's not cool. But like it becomes a mess, doesn't it?
So we're getting back to Hugh Grant cool, aren't we? For Tom Holland, the jittering mess is now. Oh.
I feel Tom Holland's a great Parker and a decent Spidey.
Yeah.
I feel he gets the Peter Parker character spot on for what I love of the character from the comics at that age, not like the older one, which apparently, according to the comics, is only in his late 20s.
Well, they keep doing that with comics. I've heard recently that we've moved out of a Vietnam war for some backstories in order to age them accordingly.
That's why we need more wars to take place, because these characters need to be updated. For
America is not trying to start fights hard enough. we've got to think about the next 40 years of comics.
Maguire was fantastic at the time, and we didn't have anything to draw like to really compare him to. I think that overall he ends up being the weakest. However, he does star in the best Spider-Man film, which Spider-Man moves 3. Nicely onto question 5, into which is ranking the Spider-Man movies in order of preference and discuss the reasoning for the choices. I mean, for me, Spider-Man 2 is still the pinnacle of a Spider-Man film. It hits the ground running. It's got a great villain played by a great actor. I mean, Doc Ock on screen is just amazing to watch.
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant. And it's like a villain that you actually, this is one thing that Raimi was good at. He made villains that you actually kind of like cared for to some degree.
Yeah.
And you got some understanding. Even like his use of Green Goblin in the first film, you can see how his drive for power was corrupted and exaggerated when the accident took place.
Mm.
So you don't necessarily hate him as a character. You sympathise with where he was put, and then you hate him at the end. But, Spider-Man 2 is just such an immensely rewatchable film. There's every moment in that film hits the beats. Homecoming is my second. I think it was a great reintroduction to a character without having to tell us that Uncle Ben's died again. Amazing Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
The Amazing Spider-Man, for me, is a better film than Raimi's first film. I think it's a better origin story. It's only let down by the fact that it's telling exactly the same story, just with a different villain character. The Lizard is the Green Goblin. Then Raimi's Spider-Man. Then Far From Home. Then Amazing 2, which, let's not dwell too much.
I'm not having this.
And then Spider-Man 3. starts off really well. Starts off well with the Sandman. But then you can see the point at which Raimi lost his old motivation because he was forced to use a character that he's never liked. As soon as the black costume starts coming into it, the film falls apart.
The question for me is, what do you prefer? Do you prefer emo jazz or do you prefer weird paranoid dubstep? And for me, it will always be emo jazz.
Dubstep for the win.
I think that's a fairly... I never know what to do with Homecoming because I love it for its like John Hughes-isms and this like fresh young high school take of Spider-Man, like, who it shouldn't have took this long for that. And then like, and it hits so many notes so well. And I know it's to differentiate it from two previous whole franchises worth of material, but it's just a bit too MCU length. Just a, more so on the technology side.
My issue with Homecoming, it's more an Iron Man film than a Spider-Man film.
I think it's a bit of a misnomer. It's because it's I think there's enough Iron Man in as a sort of like ambassador to the MCU to like differentiate from the other films. But when he's not there, you're doing nothing but dealing with the suit he's made. And that's why it feels like he takes over the film.
I think the Iron Man element soiled Far From Home a lot more, that he just basically became Junior Iron Man.
I've not seen it, but I've heard. And it's kind of frustrating because Spider-Man is one of the like legendary IPs of the world. You know, it's up there alongside Batman and Superman.
Well, slightly.
Yeah, well, I'm not ranking them. I'm just being a DC
fanboy.
So in its own, it can stand up. So it only needs the small references. You know, he was introduced in Civil War. You can't get much more he's in the MCU than that. So the fact that they relied so heavily, from what I've heard, on playing off of, you know, the elements of the Iron Man and Tony Stark in the second one and the first one being like a major part feels unnecessary because he's his own character, he's his own IP. He's been able to stand alone so many times.
The relationship they play is fine, especially in Homecoming. Like I say, it's just a weird hangover of whenever Tony Stark comes in, it feels like we're dealing with whatever the technology given or taken or whatever, and then till he comes back, and it's like, I just want a Spider-Man film. And Far From Home, I had a very similar impression with, where like, I just want to see him swinging about New York. I don't need all these bells and whistles and like a city of the scene. And it makes it cool, differentiates it. Like, not a bad idea in a screenwriting stage. But the last post-credit sequence, like when he's swinging about New York, by the end, you go, oh yeah, that's what I want.
I mean, the next question was written before all the current breakup.
I just want to quickly say, we've not mentioned it there. And it was a top list, but in Into the Spider-Verse, even though it's not live action,
it's
down my favourite.
I think that's definitely fair to throw in there.
Absolutely.
And I know that you mentioned one way that Sony could get out of this whole mess with Marvel on the main podcast a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
Was you suggested that they do a live action Spider-Verse and bring Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield along as alternate Spider-Mans. That gets all the audience on board anyway to ignore everything else that's going on, and they will then embrace a new Spider-Man, which I then said, like, the other advantage is that you could get deposited in an alternate universe at the end of it.
You get Miles Morales in, you get
franchises
Emma
rebooted.
Stone back as a Spider-Woman.
Mind blown. Jason's mind has just been blown.
Honestly,
why is anyone worried? We've just
this is what I mean.
We've just solved Sony's Marvel problem.
Everyone would just cream and just leave it, wouldn't they?
Okay, well, yeah, so Into the Spider-Verse, definitely deserving of a place within there. I think all of us will agree that it's high up in the rankings there. Before or after Spider-Man 2?
Oh, probably.
I'd go before. So I enjoyed the film a lot more, and it is just made for fun.
Yeah.
I'd go after Spider-Man 2, but below Spider-Man 3.
See, I don't hear anything wrong with what Scott has just said.
He's just got straight stuff.
For me, it's definitely like the top one because I just felt so engrossed. I had fun. I got so many different, you know, Spider-Man, at least two different versions of Peter Parker, which in itself was wonderful. And after watching Venom, we stayed and watched the post-credit preview, and I didn't like the preview, so I went in expecting, oh, this is going to, you know, I'm not going to enjoy it, and I had the best time. And any time a film does that, as you know,
when it surpasses your expectations,
you have that feeling, and like, even if it's not by any stretch the best, if people, you know, people put it up there, but it's not, you know, for me it will be because of that.
It's the clever details that they put into there, such as like that Miles is portrayed on 12 frames per second towards the start of the film, so he's got very jerky as he's learning his abilities, and then towards the end of the film, all the like Gwen and everyone else are 24 frames per second, so they're fluid in their motions, but then as he gets better, his frames per second increase.
It's a great
little like filmmaking technique that you don't realise until you find out that information. Next time you watch it, you go, oh yeah, I can see this now. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant creative decisions.
Well, it's just well written, and it's like a pop art masterpiece. So interesting visually, isn't it? Almost too interesting, where you feel like, what, I'm tripping out.
So question six was written not only before the Sony Marvel breakup, but also before Venom came out. So just to tell you what the original question was, it was like, they're expanding out the range of characters from the comics, the first of which is the imminent Venom film. Are you excited for any proposed outings planned, or should they stick to working with Disney? Well, how did you feel about Venom?
I'm not going to lie, it's terrible, but I had so much fun that I can't hate it, and I look forward to that more.
I agree with that.
It's got just enough to make you half hopeful with the right direction. You might get an all right sequel.
And Andy Serkis is developing the sequel.
Yeah,
that gives me hope, because on that first Venom film, I got as far as the lobster tank, and that was the point at which I disassociated myself from that film completely. That was like, no, hate this scene, hate everything that's going on here. This is garbage, and the rest of the film just didn't get much better.
Yeah, I love Tom Hardy, so when it feels like you're still not enjoying it, you're like, well, he's pushing against a lot, isn't he?
That lobster tank thing apparently was his own idea. That's the point at which a director should have turned around and gone, no, do the role that I've given you. You're not climbing in a lobster tank.
I'm against you there. I bet when Tom Hardy said it, it's just like, no, let's see this. Let's see a man jump in a lobster tank. Yeah, why not?
I think at that point, he's just counting money and not paying attention to what's going on.
On the horizon, we've got films such as Morbius, Black Cat, Silver Sable.
I'd like to see these characters done well, but like after Venom, I'm not hopeful. So all I can hope is that, like Venom, even though I'm like, this is awful. Why have they done this? I'm having fun. Because I'm a bad person, apparently.
It just takes the right idea and tone, doesn't it? But I just think a lot of these characters don't even support their own comic books. Why would they support their own film?
Yeah.
Without being too brutal about it. Like, as far as I'm aware, is he a Black Cat comic book?
I think there is at the moment, but it's always limited series, as they only ever run to like 12 issues, and then like it becomes volume 3 and then volume 4 and...
And I know there's different wrinkles, and I'll sound horribly dismissive of the character who's probably beloved, but she's just a Catwoman clone, isn't she?
Yeah.
So do we need that?
At this point, you're not allowed to just say the clone word around a Marvel character.
With Spider-Man.
She has super strength, doesn't she?
Oh, yeah, there's wrinkles.
They've modified it.
It must have been in the 80s or early 90s. I think it was the late 80s that they obviously realised that they were just blatantly doing Catwoman. So she got her bad luck powers.
Because
Kingpin had been developing some like experiments going on, and she got embroiled in them and given these abilities that meant that she could make everyone else around her suffer from bad luck, which worked well with like Spidey at the time was budding up with her a lot, but then everything started to go wrong for him as a backlash.
Oh, interesting. Nice. Well, in the 90s animated series, wasn't it like some version of Captain America's super soldier serum or something? It's funny how they reinvent it, but like, I imagine that'd be a great story to tell with Spider-Man, because it's very much about their relationship a lot of time, and she's on that Catwoman end of where she fall in here. But on her own, like, what story are you telling me?
What I've enjoyed about general, like, some of the characters in comic book movies is, unless they're a villain and they're subjected to the back, because, you know, they're in one with a bunch of big names where people are more innocent heroes, you occasionally get a character developed in a way that they're not in the comics. So when you get a spotlight like that on them, I just kind of hope that someone's going to take them, put their own twist on them, and make them interesting and relevant, so that maybe, you know...
I'd love the idea of like a Spider-Verse movie where it explores like the interpersonal relationships of all these villains, like your hammerheads and stuff, obviously recruit people like Rhino and Scorpion and all that. You could do a really interesting thing in a spiderless Spider-Verse world. But then who's your protagonist? It's obvious, is it?
The sad thing is, because Sony only really had the license to Spider-Man and the linked characters to that, it basically means they've only really got the one hero, which is Spider-Man. Everyone else is either an anti-hero, Venom, Mobius, or a complete villain. And it's hard to make an interesting film about a villain. And I don't know...
The
Spider-Man brand has been reinvigorated like via the association with like the MCU to give it a more fun vibrancy, but it's hard to see how the rest of the characters will fit within that vibrancy.
When they were planning a Sinister Six film, was that meant to be very Suicide Squad-y? What was going to be the big threat?
No idea.
Because this is the thing, you could even go for the, oh, villains have to do good route, but then who's the big Spider-Man bad that would facilitate the need to have six badass spider-crushing villains?
Probably a symbiote on another Spider-Man villain, because that's the way they go when they try and up the stakes, isn't
something...
it? Like, was it Carnage-Jock or something in the Spider-Man video game?
Yeah. Wouldn't they create just something like a rival organisation like Kingpin or use Vulture? And his corporations.
So it all becomes very murky, though, doesn't it? Yeah. They're not obvious stories to tell that are crying to be told unless someone can come up with something.
But one thing that happened over the course of this conversation, I don't understand why in my head, is when you said it's hard to make a good film about villains, I thought of Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer, then decided for some reason that I want to see Carnage, as played by Woody Harrelson, doing a Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer style film with a symbiote suit, and I don't know why.
That'd be cool. I don't know if it'd bring in the money.
There would be no money there.
So let's flip over to the other side of it and the Disney MCU. There's been over 10 years of films. Have we had enough?
Yes.
Surely they've scraped the bottom of the barrel now.
With the MCU, they should have finished it after Avengers Endgame. They shouldn't reboot.
Well, so far they have finished it at the end of Endgame.
They're planning more phases and stuff like that, but I feel like Endgame would have been a decent enough way to just end it off. Yeah, I forgot where my train of thought was then.
I think it should have ended
in. Yeah, it was sort of like the perfect ending where you'd resolved the main issues and everything like that. The world's gone through enough turmoil and everything that you can't really go as big in the next phases without probably ruining more of what you've actually already created in the past. So it would have been just a great point to...
I think that's why it's kind of nice that the next lot of films are the more low-key radar ones. I mean, you know, you've got...
The martial artist one.
Oh, yeah.
Where are you going?
Yeah, Shang-Chi.
Yeah.
Master of martial arts.
Black Widow. Ooh,
yeah, and they're going... I think the right to just go, okay, we're going to lower the expectations again. We're going to just go down to like these little lesser known characters, introduce a whole load of new people before they'll start to build something. Where can they go after Endgame? I think they've got to bring the Fantastic Four into it.
It's got to be Galactus.
And then they've got to bring like Galactus, Anelis, and go cosmic and negative zone kind of aspects.
From what I've heard, well, seen on sort of like thing with WandaVision and stuff like that, I'm wondering whether there'll be turning Wanda into the major villain for the next phase.
Ooh, do a House of M kind of thing.
It's a chief theory. And the reason I like that is because I think whether they like to admit it or not, the some sort of quasi-reboot needs to happen, in if not this phase, the next phase. Because, yeah, you can introduce Fantastic Four. I'd much like them to be firmly, oldly established rather than just chucked in and where they've been.
It feels wrong for them to be new.
That's what I mean. It'll feel weird. But you can get around that with various explanations. They were trapped in negative zone, all sorts of stuff. But the big one for me is you can't just suddenly have mutants appearing left, right and centre.
Yeah.
They have to be more inbuilt into the world. Like Magneto's motivations will not make sense if he became a mutant last year.
Yeah.
It was that, like,
and then there's the whole, how do you hide this whole fact that...
How's Xavier gathered these students in the last 5 years of the snap? Or whatever you're going to headcanon it.
The way you could probably get around that is the whole fact that, you know, Xavier's done something with people's memories and stuff like that. But that is just a cheap way to get out of it.
Yeah. And then when you're supposed to have an organisation in the past like S.H.I.E.L.D.
But I think the best way, have like almost a new snap thing with Wanda and do the reverse
House of
M. Or, back to Fantastic Four, slowly introducing those characters, introduce Doom, go for God Emperor Doom and do Secret Wars.
Ooh.
Used like, and not the original Secret Wars where it was like Battle World, but the more recent Secret Wars where it was all the alternate realities were collided, and that's how you can bring all the different aspects together. And because the result of that in the comics was that when it went back to just the one Earth, there was elements from all the different alternate universes on that Earth. So like Miles Morales is in the same universe as the standard Peter Parker, who's also like, you've got Spider-Man 2099 is now firmly within that unit. Everything was folded into one. It was basically Marvel's version of Crisis.
And
admittedly, they've now created another multiverse afterwards, so they've done exactly what DC did with Crisis.
Well,
we're getting rid of the multiverses.
No,
now we're just putting them there and calling them Elseworlds.
It's comic book continuity housekeeping, isn't it? That's why all these things were. But I think they're going to have to do that because it's been an amazing experiment and they've done amazing to get this far. And they've got a great bookend ending here and they've probably got a great plan for the next phase or two. But at some point, it's going to become so convoluted, messy, and difficult. And frankly, in about 5-10 years' time, you're going to want another Iron Man.
Which films of the MCU to date are the defining moments? Which ones are the high points? Which ones do you find yourself returning to more and more?
Have I even watched any more than once?
Aside from Jason.
It depends, because it's not one of my... It's not in my top five or anything, but I think that you have to see the Avengers as a high point moment of, we turned a corner there, that was the grand experiment proving it could work, sort of.
Yeah.
Insta money. And it was insanely fun, especially at the time. Admittedly, I don't revisit it as much as I imagined I would at the time.
Well, on my first viewing of it, I really enjoyed it and stuff, but I prefer the sort of superhero movies where the villain is hard as nails, and, you know, you have the one-on-one, or you have the counterparts, so you have someone who's like a shadow of a protagonist. So yeah, for me,
like Rises, like
Avengers and Age of Ultron and stuff, and
yeah,
even Infinity War to a degree, and Endgame, and that, the one where you have lots of enemy, so you can showcase all of the heroes doing stuff.
Yeah, the
those are the ones I enjoy less and would watch less if I'd watched any of them more than once.
It's I think Iron Man, it just still holds really fresh.
The only one I'd probably rewatch over again would be The Incredible Hulk.
Ooh, okay.
Interesting choice.
I've just loved that actual portrayal of Hulk, and, you know, an actual Hulk film where we've got to see a great villain in Abomination, sort of like somebody who rivaled Hulk's brute strength and whatever.
Did you not like him shouting at an abstract bubble in Ang Lee's?
The Ang Lee one was silly, with the whole fact that it's like, the angrier he gets, the bigger he gets. So you get to the point where it's like, yeah, I can't even stand on the earth. I'm just angry.
Abomination played by
Tim Roth.
Going back
full circle to the last bonus episode there, guys. We told you we'd remember what film he was also in, for those who listened to the last bonus episode.
Oh, it was good film, though. It depends if you qualify that as a good film.
I've got some time for Incredible Hulk.
I think it's underrated.
I'd really love to have a World War Hulk and stuff like that. I've actually been introduced into the MCU, but...
I'd love Planet Hulk followed by World War Hulk.
The fact that they did it with Ragnarok, it's just that Ragnarok did it wrong, in my opinion. But
the thing is, I love Ragnarok.
I enjoyed the film, but yeah, I would have preferred a better Planet Hulk.
I know there's been rumblings that... you know, the direction for the Hulk as a character going forward is going to be the branching off the personalities and creating the Maestro.
Oh, okay.
And then he becomes a villain, like, because it's his brain.
Yeah.
But with the aggression within there. That could be interesting to see if it pans out like that. And that could lead towards, like, a Planet Hulk, World War Hulk. I mean, let's be honest, World War Hulk, it's just Hulk really, really annoyed that he was just chucked into space, gets back to Earth and beats everyone up.
Yeah.
What a great miniseries that was.
That's all I wanted from
him. He had a family. That family died because of the assholes.
It was just an excuse to watch Hulk beating up all of your favourite heroes.
It was very cathartic.
I know that was a great arc for him, where he's like sudden unrest. But with the Planet Hulk, he's essentially being Gladiator with the Hulk in, like, sold. Do you know what I mean?
my favourite moment is discovering the Hulk could be hurt in that place, and you're just like, suddenly.
Yeah. But Guardians has to be one.
I've got Guardians on my list because it was a perfect example. You always get people saying, like, you know, DC with Justice League, you can't just introduce loads of characters in one go and, like, expect people to like them. No, the instant argument towards that is Guardians of the Galaxy, because no one really knew any of those characters, but by the end of it, you loved each and every one of those characters. If it's handled well, you can do a team-based thing as the first outing
for
the franchise. You don't need to do individual character stories before you get to that.
See, what I feel bad about is just because of the... I feel that there's a lot because of the different tones, like, DC very serious at first, and then they tried to throw some comedy in, but because of a weird mix of serious and comedy, it didn't quite work, whereas the MCU has been quite comedic from the start, and so Guardians is a lot warmer.
But Guardians aside, though, it's weirdly their more serious efforts, obviously they still have quips and jokes, that I gravitate to the most. Winter Soldier. Civil War, Infinity War. Endgame's a lot lighter.
Winter Soldier was the one which made the MCU feel real.
Yeah, exactly. Grounded.
It just suddenly, like, brought it back down to earth. It was not like big, like, explosions and cosmic entities and things like that. It was just like, okay, you still got superpowers in there, but you felt that you could believe in that aspect of it. It was a great little like espionage story as
Absolutely,
well.
Absolutely, yeah.
See, one of the big moments for me in the MCU isn't actually like a massive film, but it was Ant-Man, because it showed that you could take supers, you can take the topic of supers, the concept and stuff, and you can put it in a completely different kind of film.
Yeah.
And still make it work, sit comfortably within the universe, and yeah, just be quite different. And that's what I liked, because it showed that it wasn't just a one-trick pony, which we got at one point when people were getting a bit fatigued and tired, which was surprisingly early on when you think back.
Well, I've heard this since like 2005, like it's a superhero fatigue, and like we're 15 years down. For me, as long as it's like, as long as they're not all cookie cutter, and you do that by exploring different tones, genres, different interpretations of character. There's as many ways to do these films as there is to do films. So why would, are we getting fatigued off films?
Look,
this is the question I hear when that comes in.
Look at Thor Ragnarok, yeah, prime example.
Is that the same as Iron Man?
When they said they were making a third Thor film, let's be honest, most of us were like,
yeah.
Do we need it though? But then Thor Ragnarok just completely changed the tone of that franchise and did something more fun with it. And it was like, well, you know what? Yeah, I'm back. I'm back on this, and I want to see more of this.
You're like a modern, cool, funny Flash Gun.
I think, as long as the MCU occasionally does those little risky ventures, and with Guardians of the Galaxy, they gave James Gunn a whole load of money and said, make a film. And he was like, well, what do you want me to do? He was like, make a film. We're not going to tell you what to do. You've got your own characters. You're completely separate from the MCU at the moment. Play with it. He'd come from like small budget background. So to give a director from that kind of background such a huge amount of money and have faith in him, I think that's where the MCU kind of excels, is that they've got the confidence and the strength in the directors. As long as they keep that whole idea of like, get someone who doesn't seem right for it, throw them some money and see what they deliver. I'm intrigued.
They've had missteps with that.
Oh, yes. Well, that's the next point. Where did they go wrong?
Well...
Well, to go back to the superhero fatigue where we're talking about it, when that sort of started, if you remember, it wasn't around... Everyone was really happy with them, and then suddenly we started to get issues with things like Iron Man 2 and Thor 2 and stuff. That's when people were like, oh, so it can't last, the bubble can't last. And I think when... The perfect example of that is when you're trying to do like a copy-paste or just do a very formulaic film like that's where the issue is. If we go back to Fox, you know, you can see it with X-Men 3 where that went very different, very wrong. So the only times they really do go super wrong is when they don't experiment too much.
Stick to formula.
Yeah.
I mean, I enjoy Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
But it is just Iron Man with a different costume.
With a kaleidoscope.
Yeah. And that's a prime example of how they've just stuck to that formula. Ant-Man almost went down that route, but then became more of a heist film.
Yeah.
And managed to get itself out of that rut by becoming a fun heist movie instead.
Well, that's it, isn't it? It's like it's a genre insofar as you can link them by virtue of being involving superheroes, but as long as they don't feel like you're watching the same genre over and over again in cookie cutter form, which is why I heard superhero fatigue in 2004 before Batman Begins hit.
Yep.
I heard it in 2007 before The Dark Knight hit. Yep. I heard it in 2011 when Green Lantern came out. I heard it every time there's a dud or one that feels derivative. Everyone's chucked that question, and then a film comes that says, no, look, new direction, and then everyone comes back and loses their minds. And
I think one of the things is, because film is such a relatively new thing compared to other arts, it's very strange because you see clear trends in audience and audience interaction, so that normally a genre only excels for a particular length of time, dies off for a bit, and then can be brought back. Some of them don't come back, but a lot of them, you know, do. And I think one of the things that's really confusing a lot of reviewers, critics, and just people in general is superheroes hasn't really had that since it, you know, established and sort of kept pushing and pushing.
And what they don't appreciate is it in whatever media form we've taken it, we've lived with these characters for some 80 years now.
Yeah.
It's not a new phenomenon for a lot of us.
Yeah.
Like they seem to think it is. But missteps, 4-2, The Dark World, is what I now put next to missteps in a dictionary.
Iron Man 3 is there as well.
It's got elements I like.
I'll disagree. I mean,
the twist, I agree. I think it was short-term pop with long-term dire effects.
For me, I'm a huge fan of Shane Black.
Yeah.
I love his films, except for... The Predator. However, there were studio interference on that, which meddled behind his back and edited out of his hands, so I don't blame him for it. The end mess is not his mess. Iron Man 3 was a Shane Black superhero film
from start to
finish. I've got a lot of love for that film because of it. I love that bizarre twist. I love the fact that he pulled the rug out from under people, like on the whole Mandarin thing. And I now love the fact that the Mandarin proper is coming into the MCU in the next wave.
What, it weren't even that as much as Killian being a fire morphy monster shouting, "I'm the Mandarin!" And I'm like, okay. So that's the bit.
No, you've gone bright orange like a Mandarin, mate. Yeah. But,
but again, that's very much in the two-thirds rule of it. It's probably one of the best Iron Man films, and then you feel a bit weird afterwards. But it's better than Iron Man 2, isn't it?
James doesn't look convinced.
It's probably on par with Iron Man 2. Because there are bits that I enjoyed a lot of Iron Man 2, but I know Iron Man 2 is a great film.
What is the worst Marvel film?
The worst Marvel film?
MCU.
Ooh, Civil War.
What?
Is towards
there. Invited him.
As I said earlier, we're allowed different opinions and we can like different things.
I did not expect that one. If you'd have given me 15 guesses, I don't think I'd have gone there.
I lived with him, so I knew this was coming.
Go on.
Civil War, it was just a case of... It was a rehash of some of the other films that they'd actually started doing. It's like we were saying earlier with the Fall, the same sort of like pattern with the films. Avengers went into Winter Soldier, which they were doing well, but then came along Age of Ultron and Civil War, which was just kind of like the following the same film. I felt like we got the same film over and over again, and I got so bored with that. And then with Civil War, you had this whole, right, there's a schism between them. Captain America and Iron Man are no longer talking to each other. They hate each other, yada, yada, yada. And then at the end of the film, here's my phone just in case.
I know what you mean, because like even during the airport scene, and it's one of like the greatest sequences in MCU history.
It's a great sequence. It's a great fight.
No, but even in that, Black Widow and Hawkeye exchange some sort of back and forth. Like, we're still friends, right? And then you're like, well, why am I watching your fight then?
It just seems incredibly
there is a degree of that in there.
For me,
that's why the ending's so good.
Just off of the Civil War thing, a misstep, you know, I want to mention is that Tony Stark's development from the end of Iron Man 3 to past Civil War, kind of, I fell out with him in regards to watching him because, of, you know, Iron Man 3, he comes to, you know, these conclusions and that. Mm. And then, you know, because he's can't handle the alien threat, the fact that, like, he doesn't just have to look at what planet is on, he has to look, you know, to the stars, and it gets to him and he gets, you know, a form of PTSD and stuff. And then by the time Age of Ultron's around, any lessons he learned is kind of dropped for the entertainment value and the creation of Ultron. And then in Civil War, this guy who we've led to know is a bit arrogant, but he's smart, you know, he's calculating, he makes mistakes and that. We see him throw the biggest paddy of all time with information he's partly partial to, and he just loses it. And like, it's the first time he thought of consequence, but he does stuff anyway, which isn't like clever. And you're like, no, this goes against what you're doing here, but all right. And then the whole, oh, he killed my parents, oh, I'm fuming, I'm going to start an actual dangerous fight to the death type scenario because I'm not just going to talk because I'm overruled by emotion, which partly fits his character, but then partly didn't because, you know, he's been led to be super smart. And then I look back at those missteps and get more annoyed when we get to the Tony Stark later on who, like, you know, recognises certain, you know, things. He'll do the right thing, even if he doesn't want to. He'll be the same arrogant kind of guy. And he's smart enough to figure out a type of science that isn't necessarily his field, you know, in Endgame. He's portrayed as so intelligent, which then makes some of his earlier decisions.
Some of their biggest missteps are usually from like retroactive continuity, which naturally happens in a lot of these. Yeah. So like they could have really led into him feeling so strongly about registration in Civil War, but it did feel like like the Hulk Black Widow romance felt like, oh, that's just a theme for this film.
I really did not like.
It could have been led in any way, couldn't it? And then like the spat. I don't know why I put this as a big watershed moment for it, but the beginning of Spider-Man Homecoming where it just says like 8 years later after the Avengers, and you go, what? Why? So you can brag about a boy in Iron Man 2 being Spider-Man. Rubbish.
Especially seeing the timeline of the Spider-Man films don't actually match up to the timeline of the MCU, and it's a huge, like... yeah. But yeah, you've convinced me. Civil War's garbage.
Not quite what I was saying.
So, as we move on to the next wave of the MCU, they're still exploring characters well-known or obscure in their films. Are there any characters from the comics that haven't made their outing onto the screen yet that you want to see?
It's tough because I'd have had a few names, and then I feel like every other day Kevin Feige announces they're on Disney Plus.
The TV series has given them a chance to experiment with some like really interesting characters out there.
Yeah, because my default answer has always been Moon Knight, and now I don't even have that
anymore. Yeah, Moon Knight's got to be one
of mine. And now I've got to think of another obscure character.
You've just got to wait for Stiltman.
So I said Stiltman. It's about time we saw Stiltman on screen. Him and the fabulous Frogman.
But for crying out loud, we even got Howard the Duck briefly at one point. It's not going to be anyone left by the end of
it. Well, he's one of my favourite Marvel characters, and we kind of got it and didn't get it, but now it's in this weird limbo. But I love Daredevil, always have, because I just find him really thematically strong. Obviously, he's Marvel's Batman, I'm going to gravitate towards him.
Yeah.
But like, I've always loved him, and they did the Netflix show, really enjoyed it, and it was tangentially connected. But I'd love to legit see him as a legit figure in the universe in some degree, whether that's Charlie Cox or someone else, or this incarnation or a different, to see him just meet Spider-Man. Well, that's a different debate now. But like, you know what I mean? Because they're in the universe, but they're not. I feel like with a lot of their TV ventures, it's that case of, yeah, Coulson's out there, but we'll never talk about him. And like, with the Disney Plus, I'm really looking forward to it actually being in continuity and affect the films and being a thing to explore.
They've already announced two of like the characters that I wanted to see come to the big screen. Shang-Chi, Master of Kung Fu.
She-Hulk, I think, is a great shout.
Yeah,
that's
definitely
a great shout, yeah. Ms. Marvel for me. I spoke about this about a year or so ago, because when they announced Captain Marvel, I was like, oh, it'd be interesting if like they used on the back of Captain Marvel, introduced Ms. Marvel, because she was a huge fan of Captain Marvel. So when she gets powers, she models herself on Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
And she is, but like I always said, that like if they didn't have the Spider-Man in the MCU, they needed a Spider-Man-esque kind of personality to balance things out. And she's got that personality for the modern era. She's that awkward teenager trying to do her studies, trying to learn to live with powers and do the right thing and make mistakes. I cannot wait to see a Ms. Marvel series. Can't wait to see the She-Hulk series. I'm hoping they go down the lawyer.
Yeah,
approach.
It could be really like an Ally McBeal with punches.
That's one thing. When they revamped the comic series to focus on her being, well, basically a lawyer for the criminally prosecuted. So she was defending the people who she was taking down, and it added great humour, but also like some great storylines came from that. Conflicts of interest and things like that.
Again, I just now really want a She-Hulk themed Phoenix Wright style game. Instead of Objection, you just punch the floor.
I'd like to see a skew towards some of the obscure and zany kind of characters. I mean, we've already had Howard the Duck briefly turn up. I want to see more of Howard on the screen properly.
Squirrel Girl
and Gwenpool.
Ooh,
yeah.
Two that I'd love to see them play with. And I don't think they'll fit nicely into the films, but I think now that they've got the Disney Plus TV franchises to work with, they could really have fun with that and introduce the characters there where they can be set within the same universe but not have that lasting impact that has to cross over.
It's so tough because every time I've got an answer for this, I feel like they reveal something like, oh, I just said Blade, he revealed it. I just said Shield, they revealed the Moon Knight, which is why I said Daredevil. But the one character, it's not to a series onto himself, but the one character, well, that's the moment you can completely MCU, switch it off tomorrow, I'm happy, like it's over. MODOK. That's when like, oh, they can do anything, brilliant.
That is something I would
Why hasn't it happened?
Any lesser known characters?
Don't really think of any more else, other than so like the alternate Deadpools that they did for the spin-offs on the comics. Along with Kidpool and what have you.
Oh, what if is it touching Marvel Zombies or not?
One of the animated episodes apparently is going to delve into the Marvel aspect.
I wanted Zombie Spider-Man because he's such an incredible character when you look at the whole thing, but you know,
I've just thought of where they could actually finish the MCU.
finish it.
Yeah. No, I mean, just this sort of like that reality of the whole phase and stuff like that.
Or you mean like a new end?
Yeah, so they then just jump into a different reality type thing. Deadpool kills the Marvel Universe.
It'd be a good... You could do it as a film because it's so meta. You could have either he steps it back into the universe and nothing, it's our universe and nothing's changed, or it's just a story he's telling himself out of boredom or something. You could do that as a film without having it impact the continuity. But I think the obvious ones are we want to see Fantastic Four and X-Men to kind of bring it full circle. It's kind of the big two, isn't it? Like,
and that brings it nicely full circle. If any screenwriters for Marvel have been listening to this podcast, bear in mind that all the ideas that we presented are our own. We have them recorded. If you try to steal them, we will sue. So I'd like to thank my guests today for joining me for this roundtable discussion. I say roundtable, it's more like an oval. Oval team discussion. I've been Andy.
James.
Jason.
Scott.
And after that little role reversal, thank you for listening. Be sure to tune into our later podcasts. Thank you very much.